So as we live life, there are obviously some God-ordained laws that govern the universe in which we live. Some of those laws are permanent, and some of them are predictable. Some of the permanent laws obviously would be like the law of gravity. If I were to jump off of the stage, I'm going to go down. There's no time, as far as we know in human history, that anyone has defied the law of gravity. It's one of those that if you jump off of a building, no matter how much you believe that you can defy the law of gravity, you're going to plummet to the earth and get hurt if you jump. That is a law of the universe. It's not necessarily found in the Bible that God put in place. That simply happens. Other laws of the universe, laws of nature, are more what we would call predictable. One of those laws that actually is found in the Bible but goes kind of beyond the Bible scope is the idea that you reap what you sow, that there is a cause and effect element of the earth. If you do certain things, there are natural consequences to those things. That if you sow certain seeds, you're going to produce certain fruit. That is a predictable law that is not always a permanent law. Now, we live in a culture that basically says you get what you have coming. What goes around comes around. Actions have consequences. We live in a culture that law is very predictable. As Zach and I learned, if you pull for the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to have heartache. That's just reality. We have decided that, Zach and I have decided, the best thing that we can do for baby Levi in terms of sports is to dissuade him from becoming a Dallas Cowboys fan. If we can point him in a different direction, that we can save him a lot of future heartache and a lot of pain. And so we've decided the best thing that we can do for him is to encourage him to pull for another team. You guys have any suggestions out there? Alabama, I know. I get it, Alabama. And so if you pull for certain teams, you're going to have certain consequences. The sow and reap principle is very and usually predictable. And it can work for you, and it can work against you. If you save money, you will have money. If you save money for your retirement, hopefully when you retire, you will have money. If you decide, I'm going to eat nothing but carbs, and I'm not going to exercise in any way, and I'm going to eat as much carbs and as much sugar and as much bread as I choose, and I'm going to do no exercise, I want to see how little exercise I can do, the likelihood is you will gain weight. If you commit crimes, there is a possibility that you will end up in jail or running for the president of the United States. I'm not sure which one. If you pursue academic diligence, if you study hard, work hard, apply yourself academically, then there is a higher chance that you will make better grades. And if you don't apply yourself, and if you goof off in school or in college, then the likelihood that you're going to have the grades that you could have is narrow. Sow, reap, cause, effect. Now, there are exceptions to the sow, reap principle. There are very healthy people who have heart attacks, who have things that go wrong with their body, who eat the right things, exercise the right amount, but still have things go wrong with their body. There are people that save money and are great stewards with their money and are diligent with their money who have financial tragedy. We saw just in the last decade in our country, people that put away money and save money and put it into certain type of accounts that they thought were secure, and suddenly, hello, surprise, you've lost everything. There are exceptions to the rule. There are people who are not good stewards, who are not diligent, who waste their money, who win the lottery, and suddenly have a lot of money. The laws of nature in this case, cause and effect, sow and reap, they are predictable, but they aren't necessarily permanent. The expectation is that if you sow, you reap. Cause, effects, but there are exceptions of what we do not expect. We expect you get what you deserve. What goes around comes around. But there are exceptions to that rule. And we call those exceptions in this series grace. Charis is a series that says God gives us what we do not deserve. And it is what makes grace so unpredictable and untamable and uncontrollable. And as we've said, downright offensive at times. And just when we think we have it figured out, just when we think we have grace figured out, if I do this and don't do this, and just when we think we have it figured out, God always throws a curveball. He pursues the wrong people. And grace enters into the back alleys and the brothels and the locker rooms and the crack houses of the world. And God seems to pursue people he should not pursue in a cause-effect, sow-reap world. And it's what makes the biblical story at times very R-rated, very NC-17 at times, the biblical story. And today is one of those stories. It's in Genesis 38. We're a Bible teaching church here, so if you have a Bible, you can go to Genesis 38. It's where we're going to be. I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to read the whole chapter today because there's ears in the room that we're going to be asking a lot of questions when you get home if we read through some of these verses. So all the adults in the room, you can go home and read it. But this is one of those chapters that we tend to skip and we tend to ignore. I almost feel like teaching it today that I need to ask you to sign a waiver before we discuss it, like what we're about to talk about. I'm not going to hold against Devin because it's in the Bible. But I'm not going to have you sign a waiver today before we talk about it. But Genesis 38 is one of the most obscene and smutty chapters in the Bible. And we're not talking about the life of Donald Trump, and we're not talking about a Clinton White House. This is actually stuff in the Bible. Let me give you some background before we jump into some of our text today. Genesis 38 is about a guy named Judah. Judah is the son of Jacob. We talked about Abraham last week. Abraham had two sons, Jacob and Esau, who were twins. One of those sons, Jacob, who was a very deceptive guy, and is a story in and of itself, one of those sons, Jacob, had 12 sons by multiple women. And that's a different story. One of those sons became the patriarch to one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So the 12 sons of Jacob became the 12 tribes of Israel. And each of the sons was a name that represented that tribe. So Judah is obviously the patriarch of the tribe of Judah within the country of Israel. And what we learn about Judah is he's not a moral example. He's not a citizen of outstanding character. Now, I do believe that Judah tried to put on a good front. And I do believe he tried to protect himself. And I do believe that he tried to protect his immorality with morality at times. But he was very shady. And we'll see behind the scenes, he was very obscene. And based on his story, if you knew about Judah, and if you knew he was going to move into your neighborhood, you'd probably move out. You'd probably call the police. He would definitely be on the sexual predator watch list. And you would probably, in order to protect your wife and children, would move out of the neighborhood if Judah moved in. And yet, it is in this R-rated story that God weaves his message of grace. Let me set the stage. We're going to read just the first five verses of Judah 38, and then I'll kind of set the story up for you. It happened at that time that Judah went down from his brothers and turned aside to a certain Adullamite whose name was Hiram. There Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua. He took her and went into her, and she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. Yet again she bore a son, and she called his name Shelah. Judah was in Chezeb when she bore him. So let me set the stage, tell the story, and then we're going to jump into how this fits into God's story. Judah lusts after a Canaanite woman named Shua. Now, in Israelite days, it was very, very clear from God that they were to only marry within the tribe of Israel. There's a lot of different reasons for that. But they were not to marry outside of the 12 tribes of Israel. And so Judah sees a woman who is a Canaanite, which would not be a God follower, a follower of the true God, but would worship idols. And so Judah lusts after and pursues this Canaanite, which was a big no-no. And then not only does he do that, but he sleeps with her, has sex with her, which is a big no-no in God's economy. And then he bears three sons with her, which was a big no-no in the way God had set things up. A Canaanite and an Israelite coming together, their children would have been kind of these half-breed, follow God, not follow God, idols, not idols. Just a big no-no in the way God had set things up. They named these three sons, the first one, Ur. Now, I don't know where that name came from, Ur. Maybe like, what do you want to name your son? Ur it is. We were this close to having a son named Levi Lucky Hudson. His middle name is Lockie. That's just, you have to read the story about that. It was my grandfather's name. We wanted to name him after my grandfather. And so his name is Levi Lockie Hudson. And when they handed me the final paperwork for his birth certificate and Social Security card, I took one last look at it, and they had Levi Lucky Hudson. So we almost had a Levi Lucky. Maybe that's what happened here. What do you want to name your son? It is, E-R, onto the birth certificate. Was assigned by Judah a wife whose name was Tamar, if you go on and read the text. Is so wicked before God. We don't know what all he did, but all we know is that the text says he is so wicked before God that God ends his life. That's His second son, Onan, in that day was required by the law of Israel to marry, because he was single, to marry his brother's now ex-wife, his widow, to marry the widow, to keep the family heritage going, to keep the seed going. And so the second son, Onan, marries Tamar, and to perform his duties as the brother-in-law to provide her an offspring. And I honestly don't even want to get into what happens with Onan, but let's just say that his job was to impregnate her, and let's just say he was uncooperative, okay? Because he was uncooperative, God judged him, and his life was taken. Son one, so wicked his life was taken. Son two, uncooperative in the way God has set things up. God judges him, his life is taken. Now, if I'm son three, what am I thinking in this moment? Like, I don't want to have anything to do with Tamar if I am son three. Son three is named Shelah. He has two dead brothers. Shelah's like, look, I don't like dead. And they basically blame Tamar. She's like this black widow now, all of a sudden, has two dead men in her life. Judah really doesn't want Shelah to die. And so he says, look, here's the deal. He's not old enough to marry. The third son's not old enough to marry. So Tamar, what I want you to do is I want you to live life like a widow. That meant that they dressed a certain way, behaved a certain way. I want you to go back to your father's house and live life like a widow until he is old enough to marry you. His real plan was for her to go and live life alone and hope that it all goes away and that his third son doesn't have to marry Tamar. Now, you can see how this is shaping up. I mean, again, just the details of this story is shaping up like a late-night Cinemax series. I mean, not good stuff going on. Very immoral. Well, years pass, and Tamar realizes that the plan is not going to happen. She's not going to marry the third son, and in her mind, she will die an old maid and childless. And so, she devises a plan to get back at Judah and secure her future. In the meantime, Judah's wife dies. So, the father, Judah, father of the three sons, two dead sons because of their wickedness, third son that's supposedly supposed to marry Tamar. They've pulled him away like, no, he's not old enough. You wait. You go live like a widow. Someday you'll get married, knowing all along the plan is not for them to marry Tamar, just to live as an old maid and childless the rest of her life. Judah's wife dies, and he begins to live life like a single man, which again is a no-no according to God's standards. I don't even want to get into what this is all about, but let's say that one day during a certain season of life, Judah and his buddies, they head up to a sheep shearing party. Man, that sounds like fun. In that day, it was a lot of fun. Certain time of the year when they brought the sheep in and sheared the sheep and the harvest came in, they celebrated. They celebrated hard. And so they went up to a nearby city for this sheep shearing party one weekend. And on the way, Judah sees a prostitute outside of the city and he propositions her. So these type of weekends, these type of celebrations, they were Vegas-style celebrations. What stays there, happens there, stays there. They would go up, lots of alcohol involved, random sex with random strangers, just those that type of incident. So as they go up for this party, as they're heading near the city, prostitute comes out, Judah propositions her. If you read the text, the proposition is basically like, hey, can I sleep with you? I mean, very romantic. And so he goes in to sleep with her. The going rate for a prostitute, evidently, that day and that time and that place, the going rate was a goat, a single goat. Problem is, Judah is fresh out of goats until after the party. When he goes to the party, he'll have the money, he'll have all the harvest, he'll have a goat. And so what he does is he agrees with this prostitute that he will put a deposit down, that he will sleep with her on credit. He says, look, here's what I'll do. I will give you my signet stamp. That was kind of a driver's license in their day and age. It represented who they were. That stamp would represent his signature. I will give you my signet stamp. I'll give you my hand-carved staff, and I'll give you a piece of my clothing, the kind of the wrap that went around him. And so they agree to these terms on credits with this deposit of a signet stamp, a piece of your garment, and a staff. I agree to sleep with you. And so that's what happens. He sleeps with this prostitute. Goes in, finishes up the celebration, the sheep shearing party. After the party, he gets his goat and he sends his posse back to pay this prostitute, but they cannot find her. She's gone. Judah breathes a sigh of relief. He said, look, had a good time. I get to keep my goat. I mean, I lost my driver's license and Social Security card, but I'll just go apply for those at the DMV and the birth certificate place, whatever that is that I can't think of right now. I'll just go apply for those and get it back. I'll go on with life. 3 months later, fast forward, guess who shows up? Tamar. Tamar, the daughter-in-law they had confined to her father's house, that he said, go live like a widow. Tamar shows up, and she's pregnant. And she has no husband. Look at Genesis 38:24-26. About 3 months later, Judah was told, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has been immoral. Moreover, she is pregnant by immorality. Look at Judah. And Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. A lot of grace there. Let her be burned. As she was being brought out, she sent word to her father-in-law, by the man to whom these belong, I am pregnant. And she said, please identify who these are, the signet and the cord and the staff. Judah, I've got your Social Security card and driver's license with me. 26, then Judah identified them and said, she is more righteous than I, since I did not give her to my son, Shelah, and he did not know her again. Tamar shows up pregnant. Suddenly, Judah sees a way out of his obligation. He sees a way to cover his own image. Suddenly, he's concerned with morality because it fits his agenda. Suddenly, he's concerned with doing the right thing because it saves face. And Judah says, let's bring her out. Let's judge her. Let's take her life. Tamar says, hold up. Wait. Before you judge me, you might want to know who the father is. I've got a little sack of merchandise here that'll let you know who the father is. A signet, a staff, a cord. What we learn is that Tamar was the prostitute, the daughter-in-law, propositioned as a harlot to the father-in-law. Man, his tune changes. She is more righteous than I. If you read the rest of the story, she gives birth to two twins, Perez and Zerah. Now, Devin, what does this soap opera about a creepy conspirator and hypocrite have to do with grace? Where do we find Charis in this story that really should be confined to the back pages of the Bible, that we don't want to read in our children's Bible storybooks, that we really don't want our kids reading through? Where does this story fit into the message of grace? Here's the key. Don't miss this. Grace is found in Genesis 38, and I'm going to give you a profound truth right here. Genesis 38 comes after Genesis 37, and it comes before Genesis 39. Write that down. It comes just after Genesis 37. And wait for it. It comes just before Genesis 39. Doesn't that blow your mind? Right between Genesis 37 and 39 is Genesis chapter 38. Let me explain what I mean. You see, the story of another one of Jacob's sons begins in Genesis 37. It's a young man named Joseph. The Joseph. The rock star of right decisions. The king of purity. If you know the Bible story, the favorite son of Jacob, of all of his 12, Joseph was his pride and joy. The coat of many colors, Joseph. The dreamer, Joseph. The Joseph who was sold into slavery by his own brothers and taken to Egypt and placed in charge as a servant of one of the commanders of Pharaoh's army, a guy named Potiphar, and he rises in the ranks in Potiphar's house because of his faithfulness and his trustworthiness and his lack of bitterness, but his willingness to help and to serve. And he quickly rises in ranks to the top of Potiphar's house and is in control and in command before he's propositioned by Potiphar's own wife. And in an act of complete purity, he says no to her and flees and runs away, leaving his garment in her hand, knowing the consequences. And sure enough, he's falsely accused of sexual assault and sexual harassment by Potiphar's own wife, and he's thrown into jail. And there he is, imprisoned in jail, never growing bitter, staying faithful to God. He interprets dreams in jail. He's the dream interpreter again, rises in the ranks. He's left alone in jail when there seems like he should have gotten out and injustice is served to him. And finally, in an act of God's sovereignty, he's hauled before the very king of Egypt, the Pharaoh himself. And he interprets Pharaoh's dream. And Pharaoh says to him, Joseph, I want you to be my number two guy. And time and time and time and time again throughout the text, we see this phrase, God was with Joseph. God is with Joseph. Joseph, Mr. Purity, Mr. Right Decisions, the faithful one, one of the few characters in the Bible with really no immorality in his backstory. The kind of person, don't miss it, the kind of person who in our minds deserves grace. When we live in a sow, reap, cause, effect world, if we're writing down the list of people that make the right decisions and are pure and do the right thing that deserve God's grace somehow, Joseph gets it. If you get what you deserve, then Joseph deserves grace, it seems. Joseph was pure and he was blessed. I say that. He was pure and he was blessed outside of the fact he lived a lot of his life falsely accused in prison. He was betrayed by his own brothers. He was persecuted for a large part of his life. Before we hashtag bless everything, we need to remember Joseph's blessing looked pretty brutal at times. And in Genesis 37, God begins the Joseph story, and then suddenly he stops. And God interrupts Joseph's story to tell us about Judah, who, if you didn't pick up on it, is the opposite of Joseph in every way. Like even the little headings in my Bible, the little headings in Genesis 37, it's Joseph's dreams, Joseph sold by his brothers. Genesis 38, my little heading, which again was added, it's not a part of the actual text. The little heading of Genesis 38 is just Judah and Tamar. And then the little heading of Genesis 39 is Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Like that's the description. Judah and Tamar, Joseph and Potiphar's wife. But in that heading, Judah and Tamar, Joseph and Potiphar's wife, could not be two people who are more opposite in every way. And it's like we've said from week one, if we read the Bible morally, which is how most of us tend to do it, if we read the Bible morally through a moral lens, as if the guys in the Old Testament, the ladies in the Old Testament, if the characters in the Old Testament were people that we're supposed to emulate, if we're reading the Bible morally, we read the story of Joseph and we take away from that, be like Joey, don't be like Judah. And let me say, that is wise advice. Like, obviously follow the example of Joseph, not Judah, but if we're reading the Bible morally, like the Bible's about me, and these are examples I'm supposed to follow, and be like Joseph, and don't be like Judah, if I'm reading the Bible morally, and I'll tell you, that's how I hear this story preached again and again and again. I hear people preach about Joseph, and they say, be pure like Joseph. Make good decisions like Joseph. Don't make bad decisions like Judah. And there is some truth to that, right? We take that to heart, but that's not the point of the story of grace. That's not the point of God's story of redemption. You see, grace is about God. It's not about Judah. It's not about Joseph. And when we read Joey's story, we see again and again, God was with him through the good, through the bad, through jail, when he was in charge, when he was not in charge. There were times that I feel like Joseph probably wanted to say to God, like, stop being with me. Because every time you're with me, I end up falsely accused or in jail or somewhere that's not a happy place. The point of the Joseph story is not Joseph. The point of the story is God. That God is a God of grace. It's not about how good Joseph was or is. It is about how gracious God is in spite of life's circumstances. We're going to bring this full circle to a really big point I don't want you to miss. Here's the point of Judah. Here's the point of the interruption. God redeems morally messy people. Listen, wickedness does not win. Evil doesn't win. Brokenness doesn't win. God weaves his story of grace through sinful, broken, wicked people. Let me show you something fascinating. Matthew chapter 1. We're introduced to the story of Jesus in the New Testament. Matthew's the very first gospel. When you open up the New Testament to read about Jesus, Matthew begins by giving us the genealogy of Jesus. He was writing his gospel to a group of Jews. It was very important for them to know and understand where Jesus came from, that he was the son of David. He came from a royal lineage. That was Matthew presenting his case in a way that would give credibility to the story of Jesus. And so Matthew begins his story in the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, and he throws out these really big names, the son of David, the son of Abraham, and all the Jewish people's like, wow, Abraham, David. And then verse 2, right up front, Abraham was the father of Isaac. Okay, we're okay there. Isaac, the father of Jacob, okay? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, that's the big three, the Old Testament, their names are always linked together. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, a lot of Jewish history in those three names. We're safe. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Jacob, verse 2, the father of who? Judah and his brothers. How many of them are there? There's 12 of them. And yet, Matthew, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, when he's penning the story, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, and his brothers, he highlights Judah, not Joseph, not Mr. Purity, not Mr. Makes the Right Decisions, not I want my kid to be like Joseph. He highlights Judah, and he doesn't leave well enough alone. In case you didn't get it, let me tell you what Judah I'm talking about, verse 3. And Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar. There it is. He just lays it out there. Judah and his brothers, but not just any Judah. Don't forget what Judah I'm talking about. And he takes us back to Genesis 38. The Judah that I'm talking about, this illegitimate son from an incestuous, scandalous affair who, between a pervert and a woman who deceives her father-in-law into having sex with her by acting like a prostitute. That's the Judah I'm talking about. The bloodline of Jesus works its way through the brokenness. Remember Genesis 3:15? Between your seed and her seed, there will be enmity. There'll be brokenness. And the bloodline of Jesus works its way through that brokenness. And the stories that we tend to hide and rewrite and sweep under the rug, God puts them on the front page. Right out of the gate. Matthew 1. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. No commentary on any of the big three. Jacob, who was the father of Judah. 12 sons, but let's talk about Judah. Don't bring up Judah. I mean, let's talk about Joseph. There's other sons we can talk about. Let's talk about Reuben. Let's talk about Benjamin. Let's talk about Dan. Let's talk about one of the other sons that seem to make better decisions. But right out of the gate, let's talk about Judah. And in case you don't remember what Judah I'm talking about, it's the Judah that slept with his own daughter-in-law, who impregnated his own daughter-in-law, who propositioned a prostitute who he ended up being a family member. Let's talk about the brokenness. Let's talk about the people we do not want our kids to grow up to be. Let's talk about the people who are not moral examples for us to follow, because here is the message of Charis. Here is the message of grace. God chooses who? He chooses Judah. not Joseph. And here's the gospel. In picking Judah, he picks me. He picks you. We are Judah. We're Judah. So hear me clearly today. No mess that you have created or has been created for you can keep God from pursuing you. He aggressively pursues the wicked. Let's break this down into real life. What's Judah in 2016? You had a one-night stand, an affair, illicit immoral sex when you shouldn't have, hired a prostitute, been a prostitute, sex before marriage, outside of marriage, have a child outside of marriage, addicted to porn, addicted to strip clubs, product of a one-night stand, product of an affair, single-parent home, sex outside of the boundaries, your story too dirty, too embarrassing, too humiliating, too secretive. God's coming after you. You are not outside of God's radical pursuit through grace. Grace pursues Judah. Grace pursues you. Grace pursues me. Grace pursues when it's scandalous and shocking and undeserving and offensive. Grace pursues the Judas of the world. God's story is written in grace. God's story is written through the story of Judah. Some of you are hiding some sexual secret that has defined you internally and externally. And you think you're too dirty. And you think it's too immoral. Hear me. God pursues you. Grace finds its way into the filth, the brokenness, the dirt, the smut, the back alley, the whorehouse, and it redeems and pursues and restores and heals. How messy is your life? How messy was your life? How much guilt are you wearing? How much shame are you wearing? How much regret are you wearing? How big is your sin? Listen, grace is bigger. It's bigger. Your mess does not take God by surprise. He redeems messes for His purpose. Look, we don't celebrate sin, but we celebrate a God who redeems us from our sin. Step into His grace. Step into it. Step into a grace that pursues Judas and Tamars. Step into a grace that pursues me. That pursues you. Devin, you don't understand what I've done. I understand God writes a story through the Judas of the world. Devin, you don't understand. My spouse doesn't even know. I understand that God writes His story of grace through the Judas and the Tamars of the world. Devin, you don't understand. I hide my history. I go out of my way to delete. I keep it secretive. I have secret accounts. Devin, you don't get it. I know that when Matthew opens his gospel, he says, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Genesis 38, Judah. Not Genesis 39, Joseph. Not Genesis 37, Joseph. Genesis 38, Judah. Listen, those of you that know my story, you know I've been there. I've lived it. I've lived it. I've lived the secret. I've lived the darkness. I lived the, I don't want anyone to find out. I've lived the, if people knew. I've lived the, can God forgive me? Will God pursue me? I've lived it. We are Judah. And God's grace is bigger than your sin, your struggle, your fear, your secretness. God's grace is bigger. And his story of charis, his story of grace is written through the lives of people just like you and just like me. God weaves his grace through the mess. Step into it. Embrace it. God redeems. He heals. He restores Judah's like me.